just, you know, so much of the world is just trying to be happy. They say, well, I'm looking for happiness. I'm just looking for something to make me happy. We learned very first, right out of the gate, there is nothing going to make us happy. There are things we can program into our lives that will produce happiness. And I'm going to finish that up today, kind of bringing a lot of that together. But it doesn't just happen. A couple of major points that we've talked about is that, you know, first of all, there's a big difference between pleasure and happiness. And if we get those two mixed up, then we end up sabotaging our chance for happiness. We also learned that one of the biggest truths is that happy is almost always associated with who's in our lives, not so much what's in our lives. When we focus on things and we focus on toys and we focus on wanting to get something, then that is not what makes us happy. That might bring us pleasure, but it doesn't make us happy. Happiness is found in the who's of our life. And we've known this from the time we were kids, and I'm not going to re-preach all of those, but you know, but from a time you were a child, you knew if you had the right who's around you, it didn't matter what you had. And so today I'm gonna finish that up, and we're actually gonna go to a passage that many of you probably would have thought, if you know a lot about Scripture and you know a lot about the Bible, you probably thought I would have gone to this passage many weeks ago, because in it Jesus 9 times says, happy are, or if you kind of grew up with a King James like I do, if that's kind of what you're, depending on what verse or what translation you have, it's the word blessed. Blessed are, blessed are. And Jesus repeatedly said that. 9 times he said that. It's found in the book of Matthew, chapter number 5. We're actually going to, I'm going to quickly kind of go through these verses. And that's really what the word means. Jesus was talking, this is his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. And this is actually a group of verses, these blessed verses. They're actually referred to collectively. Does anybody know? What's it called? The Beatitudes. Yeah, you often hear people say, look, this is what your attitude ought to be, and that kind of thing. So I'm just going to quickly go through these, but what I want you to notice, there's a common link between all these. I'm not going to teach all through each one. I'm just going to kind of introduce the message this way, because Jesus was talking to some people, and he said, look, I want you to be happy. And can I just say to you, Jesus wants you to be happy. But that's why he talks so much about it. And going back to those previous messages, which I won't re-preach, but he said, I'm telling you how to be happy. You're going to be happy when you get the right who's in your life. You're going to be happy when you realize that seeking pleasure is not going to bring you ultimate happiness. And I'll talk about that later. But then today, he's actually going to talk about, there's a big point, and his point today as we get into this, is that you're never going to be happy if you're just living for yourself. If you're just living for you, if you're seeking you. So here's the common theme you're going to see in all these, and that is these all have to do with how we deal with, how we view, and how we treat other people. So here we go. Here are just some things that Jesus said very, very quickly here. He said, blessed or happy are the poor in spirit. Now, he wasn't talking about the poor as in we think of being poor. What he was saying was happy people, a characteristic of happy people is that they're content. They don't need a lot of things to be happy. He said they're poor in spirit. They're content with a car that runs. They don't have to have they don't have to have a Mustang, for example, like Doug's going through with his midlife crisis. They don't have to have that. they don't need those things. They're content. He said, they don't have to have all this stuff, because they're happy why? Because their lives, they're not viewing their lives, they're not valuing their lives by what they get, but rather what they can give. Let's continue on. Verse 4. He said, also, blessed or happy are they that mourn. Now we look at that and we say, well, how can that be? That doesn't make any sense. They mourn. We think of the term mourn like we're thinking about the Burgess family today, mourning the loss of somebody. He's not talking about that. He's not talking about these times when we lose somebody and so we go through this brief period. Or not. And when I say brief, please understand, I'm not making light of that. It's extended. But those are surrounding a certain event. He's not talking about that kind of mourning. What he's talking about, he said, the happy people in this world are the people who look around and they see the plight of others. They see people whose lives are difficult and they mourn for them. They wish they could help them. They wish they could do something about that. And because it does a couple of things. First of all, it motivates them to want to get involved with other people's lives. But the second thing is it also makes them very, very grateful for their own lives. See, a lot of people, he said, look, you will be happy if you will stop focusing on what you don't have and take a look at what other people don't have in comparison to what you do have. You will not have to work very hard. I don't care who you are in this room. You won't have to work very hard to find somebody who's got it much, much, much worse than you. And he said, these are the happy people. They're not poor necessarily, and they're not people who are sad all the time. It's not what he means. He just means they're people who are aware of what the world is like for other people, and they feel for them, and they hurt for them, and they want to help them, and that helps them to deal with whatever they feel like is lacking in their own lives. Let's continue on, verse 5. He said, blessed are the meek. Now, we look at meekness, and we think it means weakness. Well, it doesn't mean weakness. It means putting other people first. So a meek husband is not a weak husband. A meek husband is one who puts the needs of his spouse, his wife, ahead of him. You with me? A meek parent is not a weak parent. It's just a parent who says, my children's needs are more important than mine. I'm putting other people ahead of myself. So he said, blessed are the meek. Happy are the meek. Verse 6. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst for righteousness. Now, this is a really key one. I'm going to come back to it, so I won't spend a long time today. I'll come back to this thought. But he said, look, there's a difference between happy people and unhappy people. Happy people hunger and thirst for righteousness. And watch, here's the key. For they will be satisfied. When they get what they're hungering for, they will be satisfied. But if you hunger and thirst for something else, if you hunger and thirst for money, you're never going to be satisfied. You hunger and thirst for physical pleasure. You hunger and thirst for, you know, whatever, you fill in the blank. Those cannot be satisfied. I'll come back to that later on. But he said, look, if you make just the simple thing, righteousness just simply means doing good, doing right. If you make that what you hunger for, we've kind of lost some of that in our world, haven't we? We've kind of lost the whole concept of doing what's right. It's become rather do what is expedient, do what is best for my beliefs. Do what's best for my political party. Oh, come on. Do what's best for the agenda that I have. You know, do what's best for my political beliefs, or you know, and that's, there's something wrong in our world. Whatever happened to just doing what's right? Amen. Wanting what's right to be done. Not wanting, look, just because I disagree with a person, I don't want that person hurt. Because that's not right. I don't want them unjustly, you know, treated. I'm so weary of our world, and especially in America, where groups of people want bad things to happen simply because they're on the different political side of a political aisle. You know, they want their enemies. They think they're their enemies. They want them to be hurt, you know, in some way. And Jesus, you're never going to be happy. Do you know anybody who's happy like that? If you want to find somebody who's really unhappy, I can tell you who the most unhappy people are that I know. They're the ones who constantly are sending out emails about, they're forwarding emails. Forward, 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 forward. Can you do me a favor? Stop forwarding me emails. don't forward me emails. Especially if it's, well, this is a terrible thing happening. This is right. Look, if I want to see all that, I'll watch the news. If I want to see a bunch of lies and a bunch of mistruths and a bunch of half-truths and all that negative stuff, I'll watch the news, okay? But there's a reason why I don't do that, because I don't want to hear all that. Whatever happened to just wanting right? Let's continue on. Verse 7. Blessed are the merciful. Jesus said, look, the happiest people, the people who are happy in life, are the people who, when they have the opportunity to get revenge, they don't take it. Instead, they show mercy. And I don't know, Pastor. I mean, there's some things in my life that if I could get revenge, I think I'd be happy. No, you would get some physical pleasure. You would. There are some people that you probably would enjoy throat punching. Right? Right? But it wouldn't make you happy. It would be a momentary sense of pleasure, but it would not make you happy. Jesus said, when you have the opportunity to show mercy, you know, and by the way, you can only show mercy when there's nothing somebody can do to make up to you whatever it is they've done. When you show mercy to an abusive parent who has long since passed the time, maybe they're dead, and they cannot do anything about it, Jesus said, that's where you're going to find true happiness. Now, I understand that's easy to say. It's not always easy to do. But this is what Jesus said, and I'm just going to quickly, again, kind of go through the rest of these. Verse 8, He said also, blessed or happy are the pure in heart. The pure in heart, what he's talking about there is he's saying, look, your heart's not tainted by all this negative stuff in the world. If you get to the place where you don't let all these negative garbage keep coming into your heart, he said, they will see God. What does that mean? That doesn't mean they're going to see God physically. You know, they're not going to see God manifest himself in some kind of a supernatural aura. What he says is they'll see God working. Look, if you don't let yourself become tainted, some of you like end time events, right? Julie, I know you love prophecy, you love end time events and all that. You're looking for Jesus to come, aren't you? So when we look at our world and we hear all this negative stuff, people who let that taint them, it just makes them bitter. It makes them angry. They hate this group and they hate that group. Instead, why don't we look at that and say, look, I see God working here. I see God told us all this stuff was going to happen. God told us right was going to become wrong and evil was going to be called good and good is going to be called evil. These are all things that God already told us. And so we see God's plan at work here. And he said, if you will just allow yourself to not be so tainted in your heart, let your heart be pure and don't get involved in all that negative stuff. And he said, that's where you're going to find your happiness. So blessed are the pure in heart, they'll see God. Verse 9, it goes on, again, there's several more peacemakers. You know, God says, you know, blessed are the peacemakers. He even goes on to say, blessed are those who get persecuted because of me. Jesus said, look, you're going to be blessed if you get persecuted. So when you get teased at work or you get messed up at work or somebody treats you unfairly because you are a follower of Jesus Christ or whatever it is, he said, you're going to end up being happy. Now, how does all that work? See, all of that, I just wanted to share all these things. We're not going to go back through the list, but if you look at every one of those lists, every one of those things on that list, they all had to do with how we treat other people. He said, you will be happy when you live with other people in mind. Now, that seems so trite, and we say, okay, Pastor, you know, you say that all the time. No. I'm talking about a whole mindset where we stop thinking about ourselves all the time. Where we don't begin every sentence with, well, I think, well, I believe, well, you did this to me, this person did this to me, I can't believe what happened to me, my boss did this to me. When we stop thinking about everything in terms of how it makes us feel, and I know, you're sitting there saying, yeah, you're right, Pastor, because there's people in my life, they're just like that. And I can't believe how they're like that. I can't believe how they treat me because they're like that. I cannot believe how, you know, badly they treat me and I have to live with it because they're all so focused on themselves. You got to stop and think about that for a minute. And the ironic part is those of you who don't think about yourself all the time, you're laughing and everybody else is going, yeah, that's exactly right. You know, they're always talking about themselves. You still don't get it. But we've got to get to the place where we realize Jesus said, you're going to be happier the higher you place other people in your life and the lower you place yourself. And that is the most counterintuitive thing imaginable. You say, how can I be happier by putting myself last? How can it be possible that I'm going to be happier in my life if I purposely don't do things for me and instead do it for others? Well, Jesus said, you've got to become that way by being selfless. So how does this work? You know, the reason this is hard for us to understand is because we look at these, you know, we look at people and we think they're happy. We look at celebrities. Now look, if you're one of these people that follows, you know, all these Kardashians and all that mess, and you're following these famous celebrities on Instagram or these different, and you look and you see them on their yachts, you see them on vacation all the time, and you think they're happy, and because we think, man, if I could go wherever I wanted to and do whatever I wanted to do, I'd be happy. Now, don't get me wrong, money can buy you a lot of pleasure, but it cannot buy you happiness. Amen. What we're looking at is we're seeing them indulging in pleasure, and you equate that with happiness. But I promise you this, if you look at the rest of the life, those people aren't happy. They're not happy. The Hollywood scene, the celebrity scene, the wealth scene, you will never see a greater incidence of suicide, divorce, and just general heartache than you will find in those kind of crowds. The more people have, and there's a reason for that, because the more people have, the more people want. And they become very unsatisfied. And again, that's kind of the whole point today. So you know, when I say, I say this now, and I can only imagine the kind of response that Jesus got back in the day when he first introduced this, because he was talking, and in fact, one of the things that he said about this is so simple, but it's very profound. It didn't even get recorded by Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John in the Gospels. It took Paul a few decades later to bring out something that Jesus had taught, and here's what he said. It's in the book of Acts. Now, Paul is talking, let me give you the build-up to it. Paul is actually talking to the church at Ephesus. He's talking to a church about like ours. This is a group of people that had been formed just a few years prior, and they were trying to learn how to do things, and Paul was talking to them in his very last message. It's the last thing he's ever going to say to this church at Ephesus. And in my mind, as I was reading this and I was preparing, and I thought, you know, if for some reason, now please understand, I'm not going anywhere, at least not that I know of, unless you all have other ideas, but I'm not going anywhere. But if I had to come to you with one last message, if I knew I was going to die, or if I knew I had to go somewhere, or I'm going to be gone, you know, and I have no idea what I would give you as a last message. But I know what Paul decided was the most, but here's what I would think. I think I would want to tell you what I think is the most important thing. Would you agree? If you knew you were not going to see somebody ever again, you would tell them what you thought was the most important thing for them. Here's what Paul decided to give to the church at Ephesus as his very last message. In fact, as soon as he said it, the next verse says they all prayed together, and then they hugged each other, and they wept because they knew they would never see him again. So what was the message Paul thought was so important that he wanted to give them as his last message? Here's what he said. He said, I've taught you all these things. Everything, in other words, everything I've taught you, I taught you so that your labor will be to support the weak, that's others, right? And to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to, and you've heard this many times, to what? Give than to receive. So for whatever, Paul knew these people. Look, Paul knew Jesus better than anybody knew Jesus. Paul knew the church better than, Paul knew human nature better than anybody because Jesus had taught him. And what was his last message? He said, look, if there's one thing I've got to let you know, if there's one thing that's going to guarantee your happiness, here's what it is. You will find that you will be happier when you give than when you receive. Now, we use that so often. We've heard that so often. It has almost become trite, hasn't it? In fact, there are some people that would say, I'm not so sure about that because there have been some times when I've had some things given to me. Look, can you imagine if somebody gave you $1 million? Imagine that for a minute. That would be a nice thing, yes? So you say, okay, so you're telling me that I would be happier if somebody gave me $1 million and then I turn around and gave it to somebody else, I'm going to be happier giving it to somebody else? That's a tough one, isn't it? That's kind of a tough one to swallow. So let's make it much more realistic for us. We have grandparents in the room. We have great-grandparents in the room. We have parents in the room. Let's think about Christmas for a minute with your kids. So you get small children and you give them gifts. Now look, children love to get gifts, don't they? And some of you, you're already thinking about Christmas and what are you going to do and all these things. And let me remind you again, you don't have to give them anything. Give them what they deserve. So it's a tough crowd today, Tony. Look, now think about it. So you give a child a gift. And you look at that and you say, I don't know. I mean, I know parents get joy giving gifts, yes? You get joy giving gifts to your children. Grandparents love to give gifts to their grandchildren, don't they? And you love to see that look on their face. You love to see that excitement in their, you know, and you give that child a gift and you give that child a PlayStation 4 or something, you know, a video game or something like that. You love to see the excitement. You bring a bicycle in. You love to see that excitement in them. Nobody would argue that parents and grandparents get joy from seeing children open up gifts. But we would also look at that and say, well, I don't know, that child looks pretty happy too, right? But wait, here's the difference. What that child is getting is pleasure. That child is getting pleasure. You know why? Because the child is focused on the what. The child's joy comes from the what. Now, I know some of you are saying, not my child. My boy, my daughter, is so mature and so spiritual that they would just be happy with anything. They just love the person giving it to them. Really? Wrap up some underwear and give that to them and show me the reaction. When they're expecting an iPad and they open up a pair of socks, yeah, you show me. Show me the proof that they're just happy to get anything. No, the child is getting pleasure from the what. And there's nothing wrong with that. That child is saying, that's what I want. That's what the child thinks that toy will make them happy. What happens 6 months later? They don't even remember the who gave it to them. They don't remember which grandparent or which, because it's been sitting in their closet now for 3 months, you know, or it got taken away from them, right? Because they were messing around with it. Look, see, they're focused on the what, and so they get pleasure. But grandma is focused on the who. Grandma's happy. She's getting happiness because she's focused on the who that she gave it to. And that lasts a very long time. You see, the point is, and this is what Jesus was trying to say. He was saying, you will be happy when you give. You might get pleasure when you receive. Now, I understand there's exceptions and all that. There are some people who say, well, I'm really grateful that person thought of me. And I get all that, but I'm talking about in general. When we focus on the what's, we get pleasure. When we focus on the who, then we get happiness, which lasts much longer. So that's what Jesus was trying to explain. He was saying, look, this is what it's all about. It's all about giving if you give. So he was trying to teach us that all attempts, really, and here's the thing. So what he was saying was every attempt you make to try to get something, to consume something, to get something for yourself, he said, what you're really doing is you're just actually trying to get pleasure, watch, at someone else's expense. Well, think about it. Everything we try to get for ourselves, most things we try to get for ourselves, we're trying to get pleasure at somebody else's expense. In fact, Paul said it this way in the book of Galatians. Paul was talking about this, and so he comes back to it in the book of Galatians. And in chapter number 5, he talks about something called the works of the flesh. And this is what he's kind of illustrating. Now follow me as we just kind of go through this quickly. He said, look, here's the things. Your flesh, that means our bodies, that means our desires, or what we want pleasure for. He said, there's no doubt there's pleasure in things that your body and your flesh want. And here's what they are. He said, the works of the flesh are obvious. Now, if they're obvious, he could have just left it at that, but instead he decided to go ahead and list them anyway. He said, which are these? Adultery. Is that pleasurable for the people involved? Yeah, for a time. Sexual sin, uncleanness, debauchery, idolatry, which means trying to get, you know, witchcraft. It means trying to you know, use the forces of nature to our benefit. Hatred, wrath, strife. And again, I don't want to talk about all these different things, but my point is, if you notice what all those things have in common, all of those things have in common are all about trying to get something for me, aren't they? At someone else's expense. And he said there's kind of a double whammy built into that for you. The first thing is those are all pleasure-oriented and they all are very fleeting. Look, there are people that look at this list and you remember. We can all look at this and remember. I remember when I did this. I remember when I did that. I remember when I was involved in that. And you know what? That's true. It was very pleasurable for a very short time. And then it stopped being pleasurable very, very fast. It cost me something dear to me. I know it's quiet in here. But that's the truth. We all can look at that. We were looking for pleasure at someone else's expense, whether it was our family or the person being done to and all these things. So all these things, these are all about seeking pleasure. And what is the end result? His point was the end result of all these things is two things. It's a double whammy. Number one, that pleasure goes away very, very quickly. But here's the big thing, those also all create an appetite. They all create an appetite. How do you grow an appetite? By feeding it, right? We grow an appetite. Because nobody has ever said, you know what, I'm going to smoke one more cigarette and then I'll be good, right? I'm going to eat one more pizza and then I won't ever want any again, right? How do we grow an appetite? We grow an appetite by feeding it. And when we feed a fleshly appetite, well, like which is what we were talking about, what happens is the pleasure of that appetite, once we have consumed the pleasure goes away, and then we're left with a bigger appetite than we had to begin with. You follow me? And when we have a big appetite that cannot be satisfied, we're left feeling very empty inside, very lonely, and more frustrated than we ever were before. And this is why Jesus and Paul were trying to tell us, trying to go after things for yourself will only leave you wanting more. And it will sabotage your chance for happiness. Now, he's not saying that pleasure is all, Jesus never argued that pleasure was always wrong. It's not wrong. But seeking pleasure only, seeking my own, seeking things for me that make me feel good, what he's saying is that is an endless thing. It's just like our principle out here. I think it's principle number 5. There is no satisfaction for an appetite that God did not create. And let me just be very clear. God did not create an unhealthy sexual appetite in anybody. Unnatural, immoral. You know, God didn't create that. God did not create an appetite for addiction that lead to addictive behaviors. He didn't create those appetites. We created those appetites. And we'll never find a satisfaction for it because it's not something that God created. God designed us differently. God designed us not to be constantly trying to satisfy the needs of our flesh, but rather he gave us an alternative. Here's what the alternative is. Next verse, the next passage. He went on to say, he said, look, but you have an alternative. You don't have to just constantly be seeking your own physical pleasure or your own things for yourself. But he said, there's a difference. If you do the opposite of that, if instead of seeking your own, which was all that list we just read, if you will instead take a look at Chad, take a look at Harold, and take a look at Howard, and take a look at Josh, and say, what can I do for them? Amen. How can I make his life better? How can I make his time more? How can I send some pleasure his way? And some joy his way, her way. He said, when you do that, that actually produces a fruit. See, there's a big difference in this passage. And I'm not going to, you know, those of you who know this passage, you've studied it, you realize the first one was the works of the flesh. He gave us what you do. This is not about what you do. This is about what you get when you do the opposite of what the works of the flesh are. He said, when you do that, guess what God produces in your life? Guess what God puts in you when you do things for others? He said he puts love in you. He puts joy. Do you want to know how some people can love people so much? There are some people in this room. Okay, Amber back here loves children. I mean loves children. I mean loves children. She does. You know why she loves children so much? Because she has loved children, and she's loved on them. And when we create that kind of an appetite, that is also, but it's satisfying. It actually becomes something that is satisfying, but it grows. He said, love is what God will put in your life. God will give you a love for people. God will give you a joy for people. God will give you a peace for people. God will give you patience with people. God will help you to be gentle with people. God will help you to be good, goodness, and faith, meekness, and self-control. Now, can I just ask you, does this list look like something that might make you happy? If you had these things in your life? Yes. 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 These aren't things you can do. You don't do gentleness. You don't do patience. You get patience and you get gentleness when you put other people first. Right. When we live for other people, God says, I will put love into your life. I will put joy. Do you want to know why Sherry is so happy? It's not because her life is spectacular. No, I'm being serious. She doesn't have a lot of money. She's basically carrying the load in her home. She's got a teenage son who's 17 years old, you know, wants to be 30, like all 17-year-olds do. Her health isn't the best. She's had a couple of surgeries. She's done time in a nursing home. Why is she so happy? Why does she laugh all the time? Why does she smile all the time? Because she's got the greatest pastor ever. No, that's not it. It's because she lives every minute of every day thinking about other people. She doesn't sit and say, my body hurts. She doesn't sit and think about, but her body does hurt, yes? She doesn't sit and think about it all the time. She doesn't sit and think about how much she could do if she just had more money, if she just had this, or if she had a better car, she had a better house, she had better this, better that. She doesn't do all that. She's just constantly talking to people about their lives. How many of you met Sherry in this room for the first time on her bus? Raise your hand. Look at this. And you're here because she was happy when you met her. And you saw something in her. And you said, I'd like to have that. And she probably couldn't have verbalized why she's so happy. I'm telling you, that's why she's so happy. Because she gives, and she gives, and she gives. And many of you are like that. And the only point this morning is this. God said, this is how I designed you. You're fighting my design for you if you try to find your happiness in what you can buy, consume, get for yourself. You're going to just find yourself very, very lonely. That's why the loneliest and most unhappy people are the selfish people of the world, the narcissist people of our world, the people who just, it's always about them and everything, their life is all built around trying to get what I want and I don't care how it affects you. Those are the most unhappy people you'll ever meet in your life. You say, well, they don't seem that way. They sure seem happy when I see them on TV. They sure seem happy when I talk to them. They sure seem happy when they drive their brand new car and wave hi to me. Yeah, they do seem happy because you're confusing pleasure with happiness. Because remember, we also learned that being happy means that we're at peace with God, with others, and with ourselves. And so this is what Jesus is trying to teach us. And let me just kind of wrap this up this way. So what it all comes down to is this. What is it that everybody really wants in life? Doesn't everybody really just want to be valuable? Don't you want to be valuable? Don't you want to matter in this world? You know, we will celebrate John Burgess's life today. So what makes, you know, nobody ever goes to a funeral or something like that and says, you know, say, oh yeah, he was such a great guy. He was selfish and he did this, you know, and he lived for himself and he never shared it. No, that's not what we talk about. That's not what makes a life valuable. What is it that is talked about at a funeral? What is it that's talked about at a celebration of life? It's, he gave me this. I learned this from him. He spent time doing this with me. She did this for me. What we admire in people, what we see in them that makes them so valuable is how much they gave their lives away. Amen. You know, we could make an easy analogy. You could have $1 million in your bank account and think that makes you valuable. It doesn't. It makes your bank account valuable. Watch, seriously. It doesn't make you valuable. What makes you valuable? When you use your resources, you use your talents, your time, your money to invest in other people. That's when you become valuable. Nothing you have makes you valuable. Nothing you can buy makes you valuable. Nothing that I can own, look, my house, whatever, none of that makes us valuable. What makes us valuable is how much of our lives we choose to give away. So can I ask you, how happy are you? How happy are you? Say, well, Pastor, I'm not that happy. I'm just not that happy. Can I propose that maybe you do the unthinkable and stop trying to find happiness and instead live for everybody else? Just live for everybody else. We could use another lady to work with our children on one of our teams. Maybe that's what you need. You say, well, that sounds kind of selfish. You're saying I should go work with the kids to make myself. Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe the next time you have the opportunity to give, the next time you have an opportunity to serve, the next time you have an opportunity to take a meal to somebody, you have an opportunity to stop and help somebody, try orienting your life instead of saying, I've just got to find something to make me happy. I need some me time, or I need that. You don't need me time. Look, you don't like you. Why do you need me time? Why do you want to spend time with somebody you don't even like? No, seriously. Most of the people I talk to that say, I need some me time, it's like, but you just told me you don't like you. So maybe get some them time. Some them time. Maybe you hang out with the men on Tuesday nights. And not just to air out all your, you know, get them feels. Do something for them. Do something for that person that cannot do something for himself. And maybe God will say, you live for others. I'm going to put some love and some joy and some peace and some self-control and all these things in your life. And you will find yourself being very happy. You know, I'll close with this illustration. Just to illustrate his point, Jesus talked about two big bodies of water almost exclusively in Scripture. He talked about the Sea of Galilee, and he talked about the Dead Sea. The Sea of Galilee is in the north, and the Jordan River flows out of the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee has water coming into it and water going out of it. Flows down the Jordan River into the Dead Sea. If you know anything about the Dead Sea has no outlet. Water goes into it, and nowhere, and it goes, and it doesn't go out. And we know the Sea of Galilee is like a resort. I mean, there's all kinds of resorts. I mean, there's life around it. It's lush. It's beautiful. The Dead Sea is dead. And not only that, here's the part most people don't realize. The Dead Sea, even though it has constant water going in and no water going out as far as a river or anything, it's actually disappearing. It's drying up and it's going away. They're actually having to artificially bring water and try to pump it into the Dead Sea. Now, how is it possible that something that gets constant input and no output, how is it disappearing? And I'll tell you how, because God is trying to show you and me, he's trying to show this world, it's not about how much you can take in. It's not about how much you can take in for yourself. It's about how much goes out. And if we live our lives that way, and if you look at the most unhappy people in the world, the most selfish people in the world, the people who only live for themselves, people who only think about their hurts, people who are always talking about how much they hurt and always talking about how they don't have money, always talking about this and always trying to get sympathy and all this, always trying to bring it in, they're the most unhappy people in the world. And they think they're unhappy because they need all this stuff. And what they don't realize is, you're actually unhappy because you're so focused on you. Try it the other way and see if God doesn't change something in our lives. Choosing